Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to another Record Celtic podcast. I forgot my name there. My name is Daniel Caw and I'm delighted to be joined by Record Sports Michael Gannon and Graham Young. We're 30 seconds in, guys, and I've already made an arse myself, so that's a good start.
That's a great start, forgetting your own name. It's, we've all been there. You're 1 o'clock in the morning, right enough.
Even by my standards, that's impressive. Graham, how's things?
Very well. Enjoyed the game last night, and it's been a cracking weekend, to be fair, but I think there's a lot of people with horse racing in their mind now as well, so it's a very exciting few days of sport, so what's not to enjoy?
Aye, absolutely. I think, obviously, Tannadice is the best place to start this week's pod. Another big win for Celtic, and Mick, I think it's now 30 domestic games unbeaten for Celtic, which is, when they last lost, I think it was away at Livingston earlier in the season, you would never have seen a run like that coming.
No, I mean, think back to the kind of losing three of their own six games and thinking Celtic are going to be really up against it here to be maybe part of that title race. To go 30 games unbeaten, it's no mean feat, by the way. I mean, it's been a kind of roller coaster ride at times. I mean, there's some great performances, some kind of iffy ones, some grinding out results. It's taken the whole mixed bag. That's what's required to get to this kind of stage. And 30 games unbeaten is a serious run. And it's put them right into the frame for all the honours. I mean, they've already won the Premier Sports Cup, the top of the league, and the last four of the Scottish Cup. So with eight games to go in the league and another two games potentially in the Cup, they're banging in the frame. And now people are talking to us about this the treble, which was unthinkable back in August and September, wasn't it? I mean, nobody even dreamed that would be a possibility. But now it's firmly game on, although there is a long way to go, obviously, still.
And I know that, obviously, Celtic going into last night's game, Graham, would have been, strong favourites to win at Tannadice, but I think it's made even more impressive by the fact that they were missing their top four scorers. So Kyogo, Abada, Jota and Turnbull, all still missing, and it was just, it was a routine victory for Celtic.
Yeah. I thought they were excellent. The last two games are really similar. The Livingston and Dundee United, it's not quite the free-flowing stuff that was on display against Rangers and other kind of comprehensive wins, but there was a tempo and a pace away at Livingston than last night. It was much more akin to the way they were playing when things were earlier on the season, really. It's like that kind of turn when Kyogo and Jota really get going together. I think they found that, and that's, I think, the beauty of Postecoglou's system, or the real benefit of it, that if there is a very set way of playing, then it's normally manageable for players to come in and make a difference. And you noticed that last night. Maeda, I think rightfully, has got some mild criticism in terms of his hold-up play at times hasn't looked perfect, but his work rate's phenomenal. I thought he was really good at Livingston last week, and I thought he was good again last night. He's not perfect, but the way those dart runs into the left, the chasing back, a couple of times he was unlucky with his final ball. I just think, and Mick summed it up perfectly there, there's different types of wins en route to a title success, potential title success, where you'll play well, you'll grind some out, and then there's ones like last night where it wasn't pretty, pretty football, but it was very effective football, and I think you'd maybe case that Jackie Madison helps in that circumstance, but I thought Celtic were good, and then that's two massive wins as well. They're away again. These games are, you don't want to say take care of yourself, that's maybe the ultimate football cliche, but they are primed and ready. Most games come with a bit of time to get ready for it as well. So you would be amazed if they don't go all the way or very close to here.
And Mick, as Graham says there, Jackie Marcus is one player that we should maybe give a bit of praise to. I mean, 9 goals now for Celtic. And I think every single one of them has been a first-touch finish inside the box, which is, that must be a first for a Celtic striker. I can't recall anyone else with a similar record.
Well, it shows you his real strength, really. And 8 of those goals have came since the turn of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So he's as a guy in form, having had a bit of a kind of bumpy start to his life at Celtic. I must admit, I quite like him. I mean, he's a bit kind of clumsy at times, and the ball doesn't always stick to him. But I can see what he brings to a team. He's a real focal point. He's a nuisance for defenders. He's physical. And he comes to life in the box. I mean, his goals last night weren't particularly spectacular. I'm not going to see him on any showreel anytime soon. They're looking about for the Puskas Award there, like that. But they're predatory. They're poacher's goals. And that's sometimes you need. I mean, a ball drop, even the second goal. All right, Benji Seagrass has made a complete clanger and dropped it. But he's on it in a flash to get to stick at the back of the net. And likewise, the third goal, he's just getting away and being a nuisance and getting a touch on it. He's a real kind of throwback centre forward, I think. Mm-hmm. Just awkward to play against, but he knows where the net is. I think Celtic play better with him as the main man up front. He touched on Maeda. I think he was good last night. I thought he was excellent, actually. I'd kind of made him a man of the match, albeit there should have been a kind of caveat. I think Callum McGregor was the best man in the park by a mile. But Callum McGregor's got a high bar every week, and I think the performance that Maeda was very, very selfless, unselfish. I think he touched on it that Ronnie did. I mean, chasing down lost causes. I mean, it's like a 4 a.m. gambler. Unbelievable at times he's chasing down, and it created panic at the back for United. They couldn't get out. And the amount of times he turned over possession, just behind, at one point he ran in behind and it kind of got blocked. And he chased back 40 yards and he won a throw in the halfway line. And he actually knackered looking at him. He thought, my God, just non-stop. It's like Duracell Bunny. I think that rubs off on teammates around him. I mean, for all he's not the finished article, like you say, he's not as slick as a Kyogo, maybe not as quite as precise with his final ball as a Jota. But I think what he brings to the team is a incredible energy and work rate and desire. And I think it rubs it off on others as well. So I think I thought he was impressive last night.
Graham, if we look at Celtic squad when fully fit, you would still, I imagine, pick Kyogo as the starting striker. Or would you? I mean, Giakoumakis definitely gives Celtic another option.
Oh, 100%. That's like Giakoumakis, I'm a big fan as well. You can hear Chris Sutton as well, who is pretty much a pretty good judge of character of what it takes to be a Celtic striker. And he's always had a soft spot for him. You can see why. Everything that Mick alluded to there, the fact that he's got a bit of the hold-up play. Again, it's not always pretty, but that is fundamentally what you need in terms of striker and in the right positions. But back to your original point, as good as Giakoumakis has been, Kyogo's just talismanic. Like the ability, that cup final summed it up perfectly. Celtic weren't unbelievable in the Premier Sports Cup final. But I think it was his ability to, like, magic moments. That's what the truly great players have at that level, and Kyogo is that. And I think the game as well actually touched on a couple of times in the build up to last night's game. With Celtic at Tannadice at the start of December, they were probably never better this season at 3-0. They were just rampant from the first minute. And Kyogo was, I don't think he scored that day, but he was just everywhere. Mm-hmm. Just clever runs. And I think that's the one thing that Maeda brings: pace, determination, closing down. Giakoumakis brings a bit of brutality and ability to score goals. But Kyogo's brings a little bit of everything, plus that, those little half-yard runs. And the one player more than anyone who's not played with yet, Matt O'Reilly, a lot of his passes are these slide rule passes. And I think that might be a kind of match made in heaven, much the way Rogic was as well. But I think Kyogo's the number one striker. But look at it as well. As much as a few weeks ago, Kyogo won't be out for the season, and it looks like he will be back relatively soon. It's 10 games left maximum. So Giakoumakis, Maeda, have got massive roles to play. And Celtic fans hopefully will want Kyogo to be back in as well soon. And I think that could be the case as well, maybe after an international break. So I think they're all going to their role to play, but Kyogo's still the kind of standout player at the top of the pitch.
Do either of you see any way that Celtic could line up with both Kyogo and Giakoumakis starting, or is it definitely one or the other?
No, I can see them both getting used. Yeah, I think so. I think, you see Maeda getting used out wide or through the middle, and Kyogo is similar. He can play both. I think he played it wide mostly during his time in Japan. He's been so effective through the middle for Celtic. But I think the good thing for them is that they've got these options and they can chop and change even within games. And I think when they're all fit, listen, we know the way that Ange Postecoglou plays, his front men are going to need to put in a shift. It's not easy for them. It's not It's not like an old-fashioned kind of a centre forward lingering about up top waiting for the scraps. They don't get away with it in this team. They'd have to put in a heck of a shift. You often see the case that they need to be changed after an hour or so, or given a rest some weeks. So I think once they're all back fit, it's just a different options, different games for different players as well. It gives the manager a bit of flexibility that he can tweak it depending on the challenge they face at home and perhaps next year in Europe as well. Mm-hmm. It just gives them plenty of options. I like Jackie Marcus. Kyogo, I'm not sure I've forgotten about him a wee bit, but it's been a long time since he's played. And Celtic have been pretty relentless since he's gone out of the team as well. Mm-hmm. It's turned the year that they've been marching on and getting results without him. So if they can get him back at some point post-split for two or three games, and then potentially if they can get into the cup final, I think that'd be seen as a major boost. Whether it happens or not, I don't know. It's been a long time and he's had a really bad injury. It's going to be touch and go, I think. I think at this stage it'd be seen as a major boost if they can get him back at any stage for the remainder of the game. So it's going to go right to the wire, isn't it, in the league? Mm-hmm. So even if it's the last couple of games, I mean, what a tonic that would be to have him available for them. But no guarantees, unfortunately. But in the meantime, Jackie Marcus, Maida, and these guys are doing pretty well. But I keep saying but 8 league games, potentially 2 cup games. It's proper business time now, and Celtic need to hope they avoid injuries and hope they can keep this form going, because now it really matters.
Graham, I was a little bit surprised, and pleasantly surprised, to see Karamoko Dembele get a run out for the last 15 minutes last night. I think he's out of contract. Is it the end of this season? Mm-hmm. There seems to be no sign of a new deal coming. Do you think there's any chance that he'll still be at Celtic next season?
Potentially. I think the landscape's changed for Karamoko Dembele over the last couple of years in terms of his market and where he is. I think the interesting thing, not the two things are intrinsically linked, but before the match, Ange Postecoglou spoke about Ben Doak and indirect about players that want to be here and so forth. So you'd imagine that a player like Dembele getting minutes would fit into the category of a player that would want to be there. And I remember a couple of years ago, kind of caused a bit of consternation at the time when Jackie McNamara said that clubs such as Chelsea, Man United were watching him when he was a 16, 15-year-old, and they'd been maybe during their scouting trips had found that he maybe didn't have as much a turn of pace. And I think those comments kind of raised a few eyebrows at the time. But you do see that with his game. A very technical player. He's maybe not a lightning quick turn of pace style player, but he does things well. But at his age as well, he's went from a player that wasn't like when he burst on the scene in 2016, 2017, whenever it was, a 15-year-old to now. He's now 19 and he needs to play games. Now, I don't know, maybe like a kind of bridge deal where you've got a 2-year contract and potentially could go out and loan, would that benefit him? I don't know. And maybe he's worked really hard and he deserved a chance last night. Maybe there's no greater meaning than him getting an opportunity. They were probably a bit stretched out wide. It's an interesting one. I think look at his brother as well, Siriki. Like, he's the opposite, a player who maybe was under the radar, was down south, worked well, a couple of decent moves. But it's been the spotlight's been on Karamoko Dembele for so long that a lot of things have been written about as well, and maybe people don't actually know much about the player himself, but he's a very technical player, a lot of ability. I wouldn't be surprised if he had a kind of Ryan Gold style career, and seeing that Ryan Gold left on the back of great performance in Scottish football, but there's definitely quite a unique talent. He's got a lot of ability, great getting his head up, but at times he's not played enough football, so I think that'll be an interesting one to watch. But I know, as far as I understand, like, there's always been that feeling that he's a different type to the kind of, he's not a big ego there, right? He's a really hard working guy, he's what he do well. It's just been, injuries have been curtailed his career over the past 2 years. So I think just for him, whatever comes next, whether it be at Celtic or elsewhere, I think it's all about game time for him. It has to be.
Mm-hmm. And Mick, Graham touched on there the news about Ben Doak. Obviously different from Dembele, he's only 16. But he has, he came on against Rangers last month. And he's obviously very highly rated at Celtic. I mean, on one hand, you can understand why he's tempted to go to Liverpool if he does end up going there. But it will be a blow to Celtic, won't it? I mean, undoubtedly one of the kind of crown jewels of their youth academy.
It will be, and it's something we've seen a bit more increasingly in the last few years with the lads going to kind of the Bayern Munich and all this kind of stuff. Losing some of these like the top talents before they get a chance to break into the first team, which means they don't get the money that would mean. Look at Kieran Tierney coming in and playing 100 plus games and going for £25 million. That is what they want from these guys. So it would be a blow. It's difficult though. I mean, it's the nature of the beast, especially these English academies now. The likes of Liverpool, Arsenal, Man United, well, Chelsea, who knows what can happen to Chelsea from now on, mind you. They hoover up young players from all over the globe. And it's hard for them to turn down. I mean, it's a lot of money. Their families are looked after. They're promised the earth. And a lot of them end up farmed out on loan across the continent. I mean, I think at one point Chelsea had about 38 players on loan. Man City's another one. They do exactly the same thing. So I can understand why these kids go for it. Because if Liverpool come in and you speak to Klopp and all these things and you get a vision of the future at 16, it's hard to turn down. So I can get it. Difficult one to swallow if you're Celtic. It happened at Rangers as well. Obviously with Billy Gilmore and Nathan Patterson. You don't want to lose these top talents too early. You want to maximise them. You want to get my 50, 100 games in their belt and then sell them. Unfortunately, it's a dog-eat-dog world and you can't do that. Just the way it goes. Celtic will do the same to other clubs in Scotland and beyond. So it's the nature of the beast, unfortunately, for them. Dembele, I think, is slightly different now. He's now beyond that stage. He can no longer be classed as a prospect, really, at 19. I mean, he's too late for the kind of English academy system, really. Is he going to get a move to the Premier League in England at this point in time? I don't know. I mean, I think if he'd said at 15, 16, there was plenty of people watching him and a lot of interest. At that stage, like Doak, then yes. Now, I mean, I don't know. I mean, obviously, if they do get a bid from England, it's interesting. But you would think he'd be better served now to sign a new contract at Celtic and try and establish himself as a first-team player at Celtic. Even for a season, I mean, he's got to come back in the summer. This year's my write-off for him, unfortunately, through injury. But he's got to, if I'm him, I'm thinking away for the summer, bust a gut through the summer and come back to pre-season looking sharp and ready to be a first-team player at Celtic. He's at that age now. He's not that much younger than Lil Abada at Celtic, who's had a major impact in a foreign country. I'm coming over here. So it's Matt O'Reilly, 21. These are young guys as well who are right in there. So he's got to be thinking, now is time to be a first-team player somewhere. And the level he wants to get to, is he going to achieve that by going to a championship team in England, where we know that division is pretty cutthroat? He's not the biggest or most physical of players. He's a ball player. Who's probably most suited to play at a higher level, actually. It reminds me a bit like a kind of Jeremy Frimpong, that if he went to the championship in England, it might get gobbled up. But now he's getting linked with Barcelona and Bayern Munich and all these teams. So that's the kind of example he should be following, I think. Kick on at Celtic, have a good season next year and then see where he goes. And he may be one that makes Celtic a bit of money at some point down the line. But his career's at a crossroads this summer. Because we've been waiting for him for a while to be the next big thing. We've been writing about him since he was 13 years old and the tug of love between Scotland and England and all that stuff. So it's going to be an interesting few months for him. But if I was him, I'd be thinking about sitting tight and becoming a first-team player at Celtic.
Graham, the one kind of cautionary tale that kind of comes up when you see news like the Ben Doak stuff yesterday and even Dembele with his contract running out is obviously Islam Farouj. He was, I think, trending on Twitter yesterday, and I think it just kind of, you just kind of hope that these young guys have got people around them that are advising them correctly and kind of steering them down the right path.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I think Farouj was a pretty unique case at the time as well. I think the Tommy Burns element and a Celtic legend, and I think his involvement in helping that young guy and trying to forge a career as well. I think, you don't want to use the word resentment, but he made that move to Chelsea at the time, there's maybe a feeling that you could have maybe stuck around at Celtic. I think Doak's an interesting one as well. Like, you've got these huge academies, and I think Jamie Carragher was impassioned about Chelsea and this idea of like hoovering up the best players for other places. I think it's maybe quite, like you say, a cautionary tale right now, young players going away. But I think by all accounts, the one thing that impressed me, just Doak on his own merit, when he's the couple of fleeting first team appearances he came off the bench against Rangers, Dundee United. He looks, he's not the tallest either, but he's physically, there's something there. Like, you can tell that he's ready. And they beef into Liverpool in their defence. Like, they've not been shy. If a player's of quality and they believe they can make the breakthrough, they get the chance. Like, Curtis Jones playing a lot, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Harvey Elliott, countless others as well. There's a lot of guys have used that Carabao Cup in the last couple of years to really get themselves close to the first team. It's not guaranteed. A lot of players, Tony Gallagher was a player highly rated when he was at Falkirk, didn't quite work out when he went down to Liverpool. It's not, it's no guarantee it's such a competitive environment. But I think Doak, in his defence, has potentially the kind of X factor that maybe go down and do well there. But at the same time, it is a risk. But I think it's made the point of Jurgen Klopp selling you a dream, and you're getting shown a bit. You might, as well, and young kid as well, you need to think at 16, his version of Liverpool, not that Liverpool 15 years ago weren't a club to admire, but this team, this version of Liverpool he's watched, it's been under Klopp, and they've won a Premier League, a Champions League, one of the best teams in the world, they could win another Premier League and Champions League this season. So that opportunity, when you're 16 as well, might be too much to turn down. You can understand why Celtic fans rightly want their best players to stay at the club and academy, and Mike made the point as well, but Celtic want the players to play the games, and then that's when they move on, of course. But I think Doak in his defence might have something a bit extra about him as well, and I think he could go down and do well. But again, a few things will need to go his way for that to happen.
I think it's only right, guys, that we finish this week's podcast by looking ahead, because obviously the win over Dundee United in the quarterfinals has set up a mouth-watering semi-final against Rangers at Hampden. And obviously, I think it will be twice in 2 weeks, and I think three times in a month, that they'll square off against each other. From a Celtic point of view, Mick, would you have rather a final against Rangers or semi-final?
I don't think it really matters. I think it was like an inevitability that they'd have to face each other at some point to find out who gets all the marbles. I think that's the way it's been heading in recent months, that it was going to be, obviously, leagues, a kind of shootout between the two of them. It just looks like the two of them are so strong compared to the rest of the game in Scotland right now. There was it was almost inevitable they're going to meet at some point, either semi-final or final. No fun final would have been fun in games, but a semi-final is going to be interesting as well. It does set up this kind of epic April, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. We could have the league game at Ibrox on the 3rd, the cup game on the 17th, and it's probably going to be maybe a couple of weeks, because I can't imagine the authorities will have the final league game between the two late on after the split. You'd think it'd be early, as it tends to be. So it could be the first or second game after the split. So we could have three big derby matches within about, what, 3 or 4 weeks? Pants on the heads and pencils up the nose time. It's going to be absolutely mayhem, because, I mean, there's all this at stake. I mean, Celtic are now talking trebles. Rangers could do a double, and they're still in Europe. It could be a triumph or disaster job for either, or a mixture of both. It's just set up for an absolutely epic end of the season now. Rangers are hit form again. Celtic have come back, had a wee bit of a dip in form, and they're back in business. It's all guns blazing for this next month. Mm-hmm. International break, this is going to calm things down a wee bit. But after that, it's going to be full hell for leather. It's going to be mayhem. There's going to be conspiracy theories. Referees copping it. There's going to be VAR going, shouting, balling again. It's going to be absolutely chaotic. Bring it on. It's going to be great fun.
We wouldn't have it any other way. Graham, obviously Celtic, when they last played Rangers 6 weeks ago, they looked head and shoulders above them, you know, by far the better team. I definitely think when they meet on April the 3rd at Ibrox, it's going to be a totally different game. I feel like Rangers, having watched them in the Europa League recently in particular, they've really hit form under Giovanni Van Bronckhorst, and he looks like he's really settled in now, and I think it'll be a tough game for Celtic.
Definitely, and I think as well, Celtic going to Ibrox, out with hearing the Rodgers kind of first couple of years, Rangers were still definitely finding their feet as well. It was mismatches, but it's a very competitive game almost. But that's the rule, that's the general rule. What Rangers have got, this ability to, especially in Europa League, they've got a real physicality as well, as the way they play fast and counter attack and so forth. great at set pieces. Celtic still probably has the one weakness that they need to get better in both boxes, I think. I think that's been the one kind of real criticism, that Celtic probably give up soft goals at one end defensively. And then they're not the best. Maybe it's a lost art of free kick technique. It seems a lot of technical players, but set pieces, I know Juranovic, the penalty spot's excellent, but I think O'Reilly's corners have been pretty decent. I know Celtic fans probably, this is a long-standing issue, maybe Christie's set pieces at times last season weren't ideal, and I think Celtic, that's something they can improve on as well. I think Rangers will, there's no way Celtic may want to go Rangers off the park at Ibrox. I just don't see it going that way. But the narrative, that's the thing as well. Mick made a good point about how it's going on and all these, like, talk about conspiracy theories and so forth, but just the narrative for the game, you know what I mean? Like, however the first game goes will trigger how the second goes. Rangers likely will have quarterfinals of Europa League to deal with as well. So Rangers will be in this absolute Celtic and Seville 2003 mode, or Rangers-Manchester, like non-stop mammoth games, weekend and then midweek. So it depends. It's got to be how it feels a bit better, how the results played out, injuries at the time, but generally, like, all three games will be compelling. And if they are, like Mick made the point, if it is match day one after the split, that would be like April 24th. So you'd be three Sundays at four Celtic Rangers playing against each other, but it just bonkers. And each week leads into the next. And obviously, we've mentioned the Europa League for Rangers, that there'll be so many elements to it that will kind of decide it. But I think Celtic, as I touched upon earlier on, with the fact, I don't think three phones certainly invest the last two games, but they've been very, very effective. And I think that's important. I think they need to have a certain ruggedness when they go to Ibrox. That's a game potentially for the title, because even if they win until now, until the split, Celtic were able to exit Ibrox with at least a 3-point differential or better, then I think they're a major advantage going in after the split. But wait and see, it's going to be absolute compelling. As Mick makes the point, it's one of these community ready thing to belt up, because there's got to be all manner of talk. I think it's everyone loves, you know, and that's the games people want to watch and talk about. So, compelling viewing.
One thing's for sure, it certainly will not be boring. Guys, I think that brings us to the end of this week's Record Celtic podcast. I should say for everyone listening that you can join in the debate at record_sport on Twitter and at dailyrecord_sport on Instagram, and we're on Facebook as well. Graham, Mick, it's always a pleasure.
Take care, guys.
Cheers. Thank you very much. Brilliant.
And we'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.